Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, it's the Nerdist Podcast number 360. Animal battles are coming to the Nerdist channel. Does that sound like my intense commercial voice? On the Nerdist channel on YouTube. YouTube.com/Nerdist. Next week, we're putting up a lot of fun. No, wait. The week of June 3rd, we're putting up a bunch of really cool stuff on the Nerdist channel. Go to YouTube.com/Nerdist. Click subscribe so you don't miss it. Come on. Now, I'm going to be performing in Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah, at a place called Wise Guys. That will be June 6th, 7th, and 8th. Salt Lake City, come by. Let's have some Utah hugs. That sounds like a weird act, but it's literally just hugs that take place in Utah. Now I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, LegalZoom. This month, LegalZoom celebrates innovation by helping you launch your dream. Apply for a patent. Secure your invention so no one steals it. Because that sucks. You don't want to feel like Tesla. Do you want to get your stuff patented so some snarky Edison doesn't come along and do it for you? Visit LegalZoom.com. They'll take care of you from start to finish. They've already helped about 1 million businesses get started right. Celebrate innovation with LegalZoom, and for a limited time, get a special price on trademark, copyright, and patent applications using the referral code Nerdist at checkout. Protect your creations and launch your dream at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom can provide self-help services at your specific direction, or they can connect you to an attorney, but they are not a law firm. Don't forget to use the referral code Nerdist. And now, this episode is our old buddy Wayne Fetterman, who, again, I've known forever. And we've been on a really good streak lately of people who just kind of plop into the podcast and they just fit like they are part of it. So it is the Nerdist Podcast number 360 with our friend Wayne Fetterman.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
What I didn't like it, and I couldn't be a bigger documentary.
Sure,
could not be bigger. I thought it wasn't specific enough.
Like how specific?
Like even at the end when he had the Nine Inch Nails guy, and he's using the computer, and the irony that the entire documentary is being shot on digital when they're talking about analog
audio. They're talking about analog audio.
I know, but it was like. Everyone gets a CD, or it eventually goes to digital anyway. I don't know. It was cool to see Paul McCartney jamming out with those guys. There was no doubt about it.
Well, I don't know. I feel like you might
loved it.
I did. I feel like you're being a little picky about it, Wayne. I think it was a fucking awesome. I could have just if it had just been about Fleetwood Mac, I would have loved it.
Oh, I mean, Fleetwood Mac has their own.
Did you see the Eagles documentary?
Oh, I watched a bit of that.
No, I didn't.
Well, here's the thing. I'll tell you.
Interesting.
Why is that interesting?
Don Henley
is the worst person on the planet Earth. Is a horrible person, and I think he knows it.
I always thought it was Glenn Frey.
Was the asshole?
Yeah.
They're both terrible.
Yeah.
They're both. By the way,
they're on different levels.
They're terrible. You got to see the second part of that. How do I sound?
You sound good.
So do I need anything? This is a good.
No.
Thing?
So Glenn Frey's band?
No. Well, they're both terrible. But Don Henley.
Oh no, no. Worse. What happens is the first half of the documentary is done by a professional documentarian, and the second half is sort of done by the Eagles, even though they're actually just called Eagles. There's no "the" in the title.
Okay.
And they can't help themselves to have their real personalities come out, and it is shockingly awful. How bad? How?
Remember when Don Henley went through his Bono phase? Remember when it was like it was the Bono from it was the Joshua Tree Bono. Where he, it was End of Innocence. It was End of Innocence where his hair was back in a ponytail and he was in the overcoat.
Yeah. And then he started wearing plaid shirts like us. No, but even more like Pearl Jam or something like that. And he still does. He still, when he tours with Eagles, he does that. But they kicked out the guy who wrote Hotel California.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Why would you kick out that guy? He wrote their most iconic song.
Yeah, so they got what they needed.
Gone.
Yeah. You, where's Hotel California 2?
Oh my God, it was insane. So fun. I love those songs.
Yeah.
Love those songs. You don't? You don't like
On a Better Lit Highway.
So you're doing a sequel right now.
Yeah.
You just came up with this.
Yeah, except it's the same song.
I got it.
It's just a continuation.
Here's Day of the Racing of Night of the Opera.
I actually, you don't like that song, Hotel California.
Hotel California's a very good song.
That's their best song, right?
Yeah. It's their best song.
Would you disagree with that?
No, I wouldn't disagree with that.
Would you disagree with that?
I think it's their most anthematic song.
Certainly it has that Freebird Stairway.
What I'm saying is their best song is a very good song. It's not a great song. I think their best song is just a very good song.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which makes me, I'm saying the
Eagles. Okay, of course. I mean, a lot of people don't like the Eagles because they represent mainstream music.
Well, that's not
that can't
like
be.
Them. That's not why I don't like them. I mean, I enjoy a good pop hit as much as the next kid.
Do you?
Yeah. Gangnam Style.
All right. If you're just going to name all the Eagles hits, that's then where you have not to.
Open Gangnam Style. Like, that's the Eagles would have made it.
That's right. You're the vocalist. Right. You were the original guy in that movie.
Day at the Races.
You left when Joe Walsh came in.
Yeah. With the original guy in that.
You're talking about Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages, which I've not seen the Broadway nor the movie.
What about the Vegas?
Never seen the Vegas. Do you get a piece of any of that?
I have a song that I wrote in the production. That was not in the movie, but it's in the stage production that my friend Dave Gibbs and I co-wrote. So
Gibbs, I know Gibbies.
Yeah, you know Gibbs. So
change from that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Can you give me any idea like what your royalty check looked like when it was running on Broadway for that?
It's still running on Broadway. It's still running. There's a lot of different productions of it. It's not amazing because
I know. I'm looking for a number. I'm not looking for an adjective.
There are so many.
It's not amazing. I know. All right. It's all super vague.
There are so many. Let me put it this way. If it was the only song in the production, it would probably be a lot better. But there are so many covers.
Yes, I know. There's a bunch of 80s songs in there.
I just read an article.
You won't tell me. You will not tell me.
I just read an article on song royalties today. Which I thought was fascinating.
About ASCAP and BMI?
No, it was more just about the plot device of About a Boy, Nick Hornby's book, that the guy's dad wrote a Christmas song.
Yeah.
And that he just lived off the royalties. So they were like, well, can this happen? And the answer is yes, obviously this can happen. So, for instance, a couple of the statistics I remember. Sting makes about $2,000 a day off of Every Breath You Take.
Just that song.
Just that song. Yeah. A day.
Here, lean in a little bit, Mike.
Well, can you do the math for the year? What would that be a year?
$730,000.
$730,000. Yeah. I asked the wrong person. Yeah. All right.
like right around there. And
$730,000 every year.
Every year.
For that just that song.
Yes.
That's without You Standing Too Close, Roxanne, any of that stuff.
You Standing Too Close.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the band.
And then that Roxy song that they have about.
I don't know 80s music that well.
That song, though, is responsible for 1/4 of all the royalties from the Police.
My favorite Police song.
Well, there you go.
And was actually the song, you know, when you were in a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
That was our song.
It shouldn't be because it's a really stalky song.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But I like more the chord progression than the actual lyrics. And I just thought it was beautiful.
I
thought the video was great. You like what?
Born in the 50s? That song?
I don't know that song.
Yeah, it's a Police song.
Yeah, I don't like the Police.
You don't?
No.
I think I love the song Synchronicity 2. I think that song fucking is fantastic.
Look, I know they're popular, and I know people go.
Did you like any of Sting's solo albums?
Even worse. Even that was when I was like, this is why I don't like that. I just don't like pretentious rock.
He got really.
That's a category.
He got really jazzy.
Yeah.
Dream of the Blue Turtles was good. I thought Nothing Like the Sun
was
pretty good.
I get it that somebody like you would like it.
I don't know what that means, but it feels like an attack.
What about the lute phase?
Yeah. And then the lute phase?
He played those lute songs.
I don't know. There's something soft about it.
I mean, Sting, would you just come already? I get it. You're cheap.
Fun factoid. What do you think is the highest money-generating song out of royalties ever?
Let me guess.
Is it Smash Mouth's Hey Now You're an All-Star?
Second highest. That's the second highest.
That can't be true.
So that was just a funny guess. That's the funny guess of the song.
Yeah,
okay.
that's the comedy guess.
Okay, I'm going to guess Yesterday.
Okay.
I'm going to guess Billie Jean.
You are both wrong.
Okay, give me a hint. Just give me a hint. Can you give me an artist?
Is it going to be one of those things where we're like, or
do we either of us get the artist?
No.
Are we going to be bummed about it when we hear what it is?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
It'll be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, More Than Yesterday, which I understood was the most covered song in the history.
2,200 artists have covered Yesterday.
Right, so I was correct about that. And still, there's a song that's played. Is this based on Crazy?
Yep.
No, the song Crazy,
oh,
I'm guessing.
The song Crazy? No, I don't know. No, the Patsy Cline song? No.
Written by Willie Nelson. Yeah.
Is it...
Because that's... I know then... Go.
It's not anything from Dark Side of the Moon, is it?
Nope.
Can you give me a decade? Can you give me something?
Written in...
Oh, here we go. Because this is it. I'm going to nail it.
Written in the... 1893 is when it was written.
Happy Birthday?
Correct.
Yes!
Okay.
It is brought in 89 million dollars.
Okay, well that was.
Now I can tell you the second highest, which is more of a fun game because it's more modern.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put the
Happy Birthday's 1893.
1893 is when it was written by the Hill Sisters.
Before that, people were just like, "Yeah, you're."
I thought
still
that was in the
20s.
Yeah, it was written in 1893.
Everyone dies young.
Interesting.
You're still alive. But, you probably have black lung.
Number two, very covered song. Covered song that isn't Yesterday.
Is it?
Can you tell us when it was written?
Is it More Than Words by Extreme?
No, I just wanted
to guess another
comedy
funny
one. Guess.
Wayne Fetterman.
Comedy guess.
This is one of the reasons why I love Wayne Fetterman. Wayne Fetterman is basically a comedy goalie. And nothing will ever slip by him.
No.
You were looking over at Matt, and you didn't even look at me when you were like, comedy guest. But you didn't even look at me. I don't know. What is the second?
The second is White Christmas.
Oh.
Irving Berlin.
Yeah.
55 million.
55?
Yeah. Big gap.
And doesn't he, I actually spoke to Irving Berlin once on the telephone.
How?
Well, I was
you dial.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those. One of my jobs I had in New York City while I one of my last jobs I've ever 9-to-5 jobs was I was a service dispatcher for Otis Elevator Company. Now, when you have an elevator, whether in a building or that, they tend to break down. So you can either call us and we'll send a guy out and charge you by the hour, or you can have a service contract, which is like you pay a couple hundred bucks a month. We'll come out and fix it anytime, 9-to-5.
Are you trying to sell us on the service
right
now?
Yes, right now.
Because it sounds like...
Because I still get a kickback.
When he said last job, he meant current job.
I'm still doing this.
Yeah, he didn't say he was doing it.
Yeah. I'm still doing this.
I mean, I don't have an elevator, but
now you think if you want one, just think about the service contract.
Okay.
Just think about it. It's an option.
Nights and weekends, off hours?
Yes, no. Anytime. You only get nine to five. But then we bill afterwards.
Oh.
See? So Irving Berlin has a elevator in his townhouse in New York and called me to say that his elevator wasn't leveling. Now, what that is when the elevator goes up, there's like a little, you might have to step up a little bit to get to the thing.
Yeah.
So we spoke about a couple minutes about what he needs, when I was going to send the guy out. That's when I learned an interesting term, which was when will they always ask, when will they be there? And as soon as they can.
Sure.
Means nothing.
Not anything.
Not a word. Doesn't mean I might as well be speaking a different language. Like, I am not answering your question, but it's a polite way of saying.
They'll get there when they get there.
Right. Exactly. And so, yeah. So Irving Berlin and I spoke on the phone for a little bit and got his address. I know where he lives. Because he couldn't walk up and he had a two-thing townhouse.
Yeah, two things.
Well, two-story.
I'm glad you work for the elevator company.
Two-story.
You write White Christmas, of course you're going to have.
Yeah, well, and he also, well, he's no, I mean, I remember there's articles about he was very tight and giving away, like, his songs for movies and things like that. It was, he wouldn't donate it. With the, doesn't White Christmas, no, God Bless America goes to Boys Club? Is that correct?
Not Boy Scouts?
Not Boy Scouts.
No, Boys Club, okay.
I think it's Boys Club.
Boys Club. I'll go with
I think it goes to Boys to Men. That's a comedy one.
Now I just point. I just look at him. I don't even have to say anything.
It just makes references.
He just makes references. That's his comedy.
Wayne, where did I see you?
Wayne, he's
playing
comedy.
I've known.
He's just doing references.
I've known Wayne for a very long time. And you used to have these great apartment parties.
Yes, yeah.
When you lived in Los Angeles. And then you went to New York and you worked with you worked on the Fallon show.
Right.
You were one of the first writers on that show.
I was brought in to launch the show.
Yeah.
Brought in to launch the show.
So I remember you guys were both doing stand-up, like building, like leading up to that show.
I helped build his new act,
I remember seeing you in Vegas.
Oh, right.
We were in Vegas.
That's what it was.
We were in Vegas because I was doing Rock of Ages in Las Vegas for like a week.
Is that? Okay.
That's why I was there. Okay. This was like 2006.
No. You're wrong.
It would be 2000.
But at least it wasn't a comedy guest.
Seven or eight.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. We were there for G4. Yeah. Yes. We were there for E3.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was there for E3. It was in January. We were there for E3. That's what it was.
So January 2009?
Something like that, yeah.
That sounds about right. Maybe.
It could be.
We launched.
I'm going to ask Wayne again.
Yeah.
I think it's either 2008 or 2009.
There you go.
Yeah.
But I remember.
Oh, we had a great time that night.
We had a fun that night. But then recently. Oh, yeah. Where were we? Where we were at a comedy festival?
Yeah, we were at something called the Sketch Fest.
Oh, Sketch Fest!
Something called the Sketch Fest.
And
I know you got a lot going on.
I really do.
I was making fun of you
was
earlier.
It just the two of you in a car?
It was just the two of us in a car.
Yeah, we came into the.
I was laughing so hard because we were riffing on the idea of mom and pop shops, and it was like. And the guy wanted to be politically correct. Is like his little mom and pop shop. It could be a mom and mom shop. I'm not, you know.
Right.
It could be a mom who doesn't have a partner, but just wanted to raise a child on her own. Just be a mom. And we, for some reason, I was laughing so hard while we were riffing about mom and pop shops.
Right, we didn't want. We're in San Francisco.
Those rides, those to and from festival rides from airports, are very funny.
Because it's all comics.
Yeah. You missed it on the way to the airport. We were in a. In a sedan, it was me, the driver, Eddie Pepitone, Ian Roberts, and Matt Besser.
I'll tell you what. Here's what they ought to do.
In a sedan. We're full grown.
Here's what they ought to do. Hire a bus, pick up four comics at the airport, sell seats for the rest of the bus, and then just let the comics riff.
That's a good idea. I did comedy on a bus before as a gig.
How?
Not like that. Not. They used to take people to Atlantic City.
And God, that sounds so awful.
Atlantic City?
I mean, just the idea of like being on a bus to Atlantic City and then having to entertain people in a bus to Atlantic City sounds like a bummer.
That was the gig.
I mean, how... you know, if you can survive that experience...
Why? That was not bad at all.
Really?
Yeah, you get a lot of... It was a lot of money. Not a lot, but it was like cash. Go to free trip to Atlantic City.
What if they paid you in casino credit?
The idea of free trip to Atlantic City is not in the plus column, I don't think.
But let's see, the Atlantic City to Manhattan to Atlantic City, was that the...
Yeah.
How long of a drive is that?
I want to say it was like at least a couple hours.
So you're doing comedy the whole time?
Yeah, I was doing every bit I ever knew. I think you had to do like... I think there was a couple of us and we each had to do like 20 minutes or something.
Wow. Oh, that's not... Still...
Yeah. And then you just...
You're still on a bus.
You're on the comedy bus.
On the New Jersey Turnpike.
Yeah. It was pretty bad. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring everyone down.
We're all sad about this, Wayne.
Yeah, I'm
please
sorry.
Go.
I'm sorry.
Do you take do you take suggestions from the eye, or do you just do your set?
I do my set.
Do you do I'm not.
I don't really.
Work?
I don't really work the crowd ever.
But you're so fast.
I know. I don't like it. I get it. I'm super fast, but I don't. And I listen, but I don't really like doing it. Because I really feel like my stage time is a great time to, like, really work on material. And that's the ultimate goal.
How often do you turn over material?
God, that's a good question.
It is.
It's a slow process with me. I'm more Seinfeldian than CKian.
Mm-hmm.
Is that even a thing? So if you saw me now and you saw me, like, in 6 months, you might see 20% new material.
Mm-hmm.
Saw me in a couple of years, you might see 10% of the old material. So it's like a constantly evolving thing. Because I don't do specials or anything. Yeah, it's sad.
He likes to think every time
it's
he goes
sad,
up,
I know, I don't.
Every time he goes up is special.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a special to be had on a bus.
I know, something like that. But first of all, very excited to be doing this.
I'm
ready for it to start. When do we start? When does this all happen? When do we start this?
We're not actually going to be able to do the podcast today. I'm sorry. I was going to tell you.
Horrible.
I know. I changed my mind.
I understand.
I like you a lot as a person.
Of course, but I'm not up to the level of.
I mean, I just need.
I'm not up to the level of.
I just need you to get on a series.
Please.
Or. I'll tell you what. I'll record this, and then if you get on a show
or something else, I agree. I agree with that.
Oh,
I am
Jesus
down with
Christ.
That. There's something I could promote, something I had going on that made it seem like there was some heat around me.
I mean,
I don't have any. I'm like room temp. I'm like very like a cool breeze.
Your book's still in print, right? Or the Pete Maravich biography.
Thank you. That's a good funny read. you're a comedy
like
nerd fan.
Not a lot.
You're a comedy nerd fan.
Where did you start doing comedy?
Stop pointing at me. I wish.
No one listening can knows that I'm pointing at
but
you.
But I. I'm sorry. I live in the real
Wayne?
World.
You don't respect him.
What?
You don't respect Wayne? You pointed him.
I did. I was.
If we're here. You wouldn't point.
I wouldn't.
What does that tell you?
I wouldn't. I mean, I wasn't going like you.
Oh no. We were actually just starting.
Why do you think it's rude to? Why do you think it's rude to point?
That's a good question. That is a good. Why is it rude to point?
Is it confrontational or
no,
is it?
I just think it's disrespectful.
Why?
In a sense.
But I don't know.
I mean, in that. Okay, let's talk about two different things. One is you're walking down the street with your family, assuming
right.
you have a family. I don't know if you do. If you don't,
I
it's cool. Still, yeah. Okay.
And there's a guy walking by with one
right.
arm, and the kid's like that and man, and then you're like, don't fucking point at the guy.
Or even if he doesn't say that man, he's just like,
yeah,
and with his mouth open.
Yeah.
That is everyone would admit that's wrong, right?
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
I think so. It is Invasion of the Body
Which
Snatchers.
Which one? The 78?
The remake.
Yeah, the remake.
Oh, no, not the remake.
Really?
What? You don't like the remake?
I love the original.
Well, Kevin's in both of them, right?
I love Donald Sutherland a lot.
Yeah. I just saw him in The Dirty Dozen, part of the Wayne Fetterman Film Festival.
Oh, yeah, the film festival. I know you were throwing a plug, but it is a good, it's a fun
festival.
It's over. Festival.
It's already happened. It's not a plug. I'm not plugging anything.
But for next year, it's in the family.
Yeah.
Assuming
yeah.
it happens again, who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? He's angling.
So, right for Wayne, it'll be
so,
back. But.
So, but you're saying, like, but I don't think it's rude to, like, gesture to someone and point to them, like, hey, I like your shirt.
Right.
Hey, I like that body language right now.
Is it just because it's is it just because it's
what?
It just throws it puts someone on the spot?
I've just been taught that it's rude. I don't know.
Even if I'm just like you really have been taught
like,
that.
I got it. Like well no, if it's
if I'm saying you've been taught that. Just like that. Just with the
they're
with
pointing
the pointing.
At each other now.
Can you explain
here's
what's happening
the deal.
To
I've
the
list? Not to point. Do I still sometimes point? Yes. It's just a reflex. And the easiest way to gesture specifically towards something.
Oh, point.
Wow. I'm not gonna. Now it's weird. Now it's like you're a robot over there and you're trying to control the conversation.
Counterpoint.
I'm just. I don't know. That is a good question. But I do know you're not supposed to point at someone that looks weird.
True.
That looks weird.
Yeah, I guess yeah, it, I guess it does.
Weird,
I
right?
don't. I know
that looks weird in some
that,
way.
That was a thing that was ingrained in
right?
my yeah. head as a kid, but I never thought to ask why it's rude to point at people.
But you seem like you were a naturally curious child, right?
Sure, but I was also a very polite child.
Same here.
And so...
Were you a class clown?
I was a bad class clown. I wanted the attention, but I didn't have the jokes to back it up. Some things never change.
I wrote my best material between second grade and eighth grade.
You actually had jokes?
Well, I mean, I was very funny.
You know what? In high school, I had much more success as...
That's when you started to blossom.
A class clown.
Was there senior superlatives? Were you given any of those?
I am still pissed about the senior
superlatives. Tell me.
I was not voted funniest. I was voted most sarcastic.
That's better.
You think so?
Yeah.
It's
cooler. Because that sounds like you're smart and funny.
Who would you rather be, a clown or Bill Hicks?
What kind of clown are we talking here?
A French clown.
French. Oh, okay.
A sad, creepy
thing. Clown makeup. I don't think that's an insult at all. Okay. I think you misinterpreted that.
I tried to,
Were you close to any senior superlative?
No, I don't think so.
Were they voted on in your school?
Nah, I don't remember.
Don't remember high school?
Well, then he's lying.
Yeah, I went to three different high schools.
Oh.
So I don't remember. Okay. And so I wasn't really...
Anybody most likely to change schools?
In retrospect, yes.
Did your high schools go 9 through 12 or 10 through 12?
They went 9 through 12, and I went 9. I went the beginning of my freshman year through the middle of my freshman year in Memphis, moved to Denver, and went the rest of my freshman year through the end of my junior year in Denver, and then moved to Los Angeles, and then graduated. And so,
Are you friends with anyone from Denver?
Yeah, I'm still friends with a guy.
One guy.
Yeah.
You pointed up for that, so that was more just showing a finger up.
He lives in a...
Yeah. Oh, we
passed. No. He lives in a blimp. He lives in a blimp.
In a blimp. Yeah. Okay, all right.
You could also just point to Denver's elevation.
Yeah.
Okay, a mile higher.
Well, he lives in a blimp because he's like, a mile high, I'll show you. So he goes up. He's 2 miles. He's in the...
Wow.
So my point is, I was president of the Latin club and, chess club and all that stuff, I don't even remember my yearbook from senior year.
This was all in L.A., though.
Yes.
Were you in the Latin club and chess club in Denver?
Yes.
Were you president?
It was in Denver that I was president of the Latin club, and when I moved to Los Angeles, I didn't really have a strong...
Los Angeles?
Yes. I didn't have a strong connection to that many people, so I wasn't in a lot of clubs or anything.
Wow. Now it's all starting to come together. The puzzle is starting to become clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it now. So you didn't fit in. You were like the new kid.
I was
bringing
it
back to the Eagles.
I was
new kid in town.
I was fairly constantly the new kid. Yeah.
And so you probably developed some skills to be like funny.
Well, I didn't have any. I didn't grow up with any siblings.
What about athletics? Did you have anything?
No. Well, I played.
I don't want you to ruin your nerd cred by admitting something here you don't want to admit.
I played golf a bit. I mean, I worked at golf courses. Like, right. That was my job
again,
in high school.
Again, we're talking about sports.
I started the golf team in my high school.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow.
I worked at
golf
courses.
Were you on debate team?
I was not on debate team.
Forensics? Do you know what that means?
Well, I understand the science of forensics, yeah.
Well, forensics also means speech in debate.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a weird...
Which I was always confusing whenever I would see the beginning of Quincy, and he would be like, gentlemen, you're about to enter the world of forensic medicine. I was in gaming clubs, and then... But there wasn't really...
Whoa.
Gaming clubs.
Were you in a gaming club?
No, I was in the chess club.
Yeah, you were both in chess club. I wasn't good enough to be in the chess club, but... I played in a couple tournaments.
Oh, we used to play.
I have the nerdiest club that I was in, ready?
I think I have a nerdier club, okay. But not in high school, but post high school, I have a nerdy club.
I was in the weather club.
The weather? All right, that beats me.
The weather club.
Did you have a
small meteorology lab and you would measure the barometric pressure?
We had barometers and stuff like that. We would talk about weather, talk about weather formations, talk about the hurricane that hit Worcester, Massachusetts in the 60s, I think it was. It was a very nerdy class, but it was a good time.
What were those conversations? Yeah, can you believe that wind knocked all that shit down? I know.
Well, I mean, he would explain.
There's barometric pressure. There's a lot to go. What are you talking about? There's a whole channel on it. I feel like you're diminishing
you're just
weather
being
and like
a dick about
what
the
is
Weather
your problem?
Channel does is just tell you what the
Why
temperatures are around the country.
Stop it, Chris. What
Come on, you will admit it's pretty interesting when it gets, especially when it gets crazy. I'm into weather when it gets. I'm into
you're
severe
into
weather,
extreme weather. Yeah.
I'm into extreme weather. Yeah,
I, to this day,
day-to-day weather.
Get overjoyed when it's windy out.
Yeah, I don't get overjoyed, but I do get a kick out
and
of it.
I don't
wins,
like it.
Bring
it,
them on.
It's me. It's weird that we are spinning so fast, and at times there's no wind. Fascinates me. Just think about that. Think how fast. Tell us how fast we're spinning.
Are we rotating at like 10,000 miles an hour?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And at times, no wind. Does that seem weird to you?
No.
I don't think we're rotating. I'm sorry. We're moving through space.
Oh, we're moving through space.
We're rotating at...
We're spinning and going through space. We're spinning
we're
ball.
Moving at the
yeah, but the atmosphere, but the atmosphere
hours.
Is... But the atmosphere is basically
what?
Caked onto the globe. It's not like we're spinning against the wind.
Yeah, but no, even the atmosphere in itself is fascinating that it stays.
Yeah, the cake.
This is gravity.
The cake.
I don't give a shit about your science gravity. I am looking at this as an outsider.
So wait a minute.
An alien from a different planet?
Sure.
So in no way you think that's weird. You're just like, oh, there's an atmosphere and
Stop
that keeps...
Stop accepting facts.
That keeps
what was your nerdier club, though? What's
Well, it was post-high school. It was post-high school.
Which immediately already takes it up four notches.
Right.
Club after high school.
Where I had a card and I paid dues. And I was only in it for 1 year. Well, actually, there's two, but...
Library Club, Moose Lodge, Fishing
this
Club.
This is all better than all of
this. Bait and Tackle Club.
I'll give you the initials. Ready?
4-H Club.
A-C-E. And not editors. I'll give you that right now. That's
the American Cinematographers Emporium.
He just said not editors to go, no.
Well, cinematographer's not an editor, guys.
Okay, so, Jesus, I love this.
You were in the Ace Hardware Club?
We're in the American Comedic Entertainers. I made up that club, by the way.
You ready?
Yes.
American?
Yeah. I'm going with American. Yep.
American.
We got that part right.
Last word is enthusiasts.
See, American the... Carnival Enthusiasts.
The C is the key word in this. Obviously.
Corn?
Coaster. And I'm not talking about the kind
nice.
That are on the...
Roller coasters?
Yes.
That was a Sandy Point all the time.
Oh, well, that's
what
I don't know if that's necessarily.
What?
Maybe it is.
If you're carrying a card.
A card. This is American.
Sandusky, Ohio.
to see.
So you guys
Kings
were just
Points,
like
King's Dominion.
Oh, that
American Scream Machine.
That roller coaster on Coney Island is crazy.
You're talking about the cyclone?
I'm talking about what your meetings sounded like.
I only was in it for 1 year, but this was pre. There was no internet, so how
did you find this in the back of Mad Magazine?
That is a good question. Like, where did I come? And how did I find this?
I mean, did you ride one roller coaster and you're like, there's got to be a club for this? What was the best roller coaster in the country at the time?
Well, that one in Ohio was pretty highly
Cedar
rated.
Point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Cedar Point.
Yeah, but there's also like these there's one in Mexico City mm-hmm. that's like there's no standards in Mexico as far as safety or anything, so they got really good roller coasters down there. There's no that's the idea of a roller coaster. You want to be terrified.
I like
so
to be
it's success
but not
like
really you want a controlled terror.
I understand, but there could be you could fly off.
But you don't.
Well, no, I mean, you got
but if you make it, you're like, that was incredible.
I went to SeaWorld.
Gracias.
A couple years ago.
Señor. Gracias.
Uno más.
Hey, uno.
This time muerto. Who knows? This time could be muerto.
I went to
uno más. Let's do it uno más. Daddy.
I think the coasters are terrifying as it stands. Like even especially the like in SeaWorld, I went on a coaster that you know you get in it and then it just tilts you this way. So like you're in the flying.
Well, was it a roller coaster? Or did you just get in one of those dolphin shaped strollers and get pushed down a hill?
I just believe my dad because he said it was a coaster.
You were coasting.
Right. No, I just love I love looking at them. I love the sound of them. I like the experience. I like the design of, I like everything about it except the people in the American Coaster Enthusiasts. Those people were horrible.
Why were they so bad?
They were like shut-ins and they were just weird. They were
How could they be shut-ins if they were going out
I
to roller coasters?
I understand, you're right. They just seem like socially awkward people is
you're
the way
kidding. The people that started the club to go on roller coasters.
I know it seems. What
that is?
A thing we all self-evident.
That's them not having anyone to go on coasters with.
Yes, so that's exactly. Yes, that's exactly what. No one. None of those people seemed like they had a friend. And then I was there, like, well, what do you do? And I was like, I just did Evening at the Improv. And they're like, oh, well, come on the coaster with me.
I recently
stand-up's like a whole other kind of roller coaster, yeah. Guys.
I recently sent the guy to fix to that. Irving Berlin's elevator.
Like, yeah, nice callback for those people doing comedy diagrams at home.
Take out your comedy mind maps.
The comedy diagram stops with you pointing.
We just connected two circles from the conversation
right.
into a square.
Take a callback. It's beautiful. It is beautiful. So anyway, that was a that I think was quite a club that I was in for 1 year. But part of the reason I was in was they gave you a list of all the coasters and the people that designed them and when they came online and stuff like that. And I can't remember. It was maybe Batman, like. Is that possible when Batman, like we got to preview a roller coaster?
Yeah.
At
Six Flags, Magic Mountain?
At Magic Mountain. Yeah,
that was Batman.
Yeah, we got to preview Batman. What year do you think that was?
Probably 89.
Yeah, that sounds exactly right.
Yeah.
So,
because that also would have checked with your Evening at the Improv reference.
Right, yes. Yeah, so.
A man who's.
So it was good. Now, do you know about television. X? You know about roller coaster X or X2 or something like that?
No.
Third dimension roller coasters?
I'm listening.
Okay, real quick. All right. You don't care.
You don't have to be quick. I do. It's the Nerdist. Go for it.
Okay. Roller coasters, until this roller coaster came along, were basically two designs. The car is on top of the track.
Mm-hmm.
The car is hanging underneath the track, and your legs are dangling, or you're sitting in something. Sure. Like that.
Yeah.
That's basically it. They spin you around. You go upside down. X puts, like, a bar, and the cars are on the side of the track. So there's like three cars on the right side, three cars on the left side.
Okay.
Those cars not only follow the track all the way around, but also can rotate or spin. So you could, all of a sudden I'm upside down and doing
and
this.
And fucking hurling into your own face.
Right. And then also the whole thing can rotate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I know, so I'm not explaining it right.
So the whole.
No, I know, but like at what?
What?
My brain's just trying to go.
So the
support structure for this.
Yeah, is a sent. There is a track, but you're not on it. You're on the side of it. Yes.
And it's basically a rotating pod. And so as the coaster's going, it's tumbling. Basically, it's.
But what if there's a support beam going up from.
No,
the
I think what happens is the track does that. Like the track.
Think of it like the legs of a caterpillar.
I'm not buying this.
Yes, it is like the legs of a caterpillar. Yeah, going out. Okay, think of the track being able to do that. Just thinking of a track making
like corkscrewing?
Corkscrewing. And then your whole thing is corkscrewing with it. And those individual cars can also spin.
Are spinning at the same time.
I don't like this. I don't like it.
You haven't done it.
Sounds terrifying.
All right.
Well, it should be fair.
That's the idea. I mean, it's not
I
as
do
good.
Love roller coasters.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
But I still didn't get an answer to the question. Where did you start doing comedy?
Well, there is no answer to that. I mean, do you count, like, the first club I passed at? Do you count doing ventriloquism in high school? Do you count?
I do not ever count doing ventriloquism in high school.
So, I don't know. I mean, I count, like, my comedy birth date is when I passed at the comic strip in New York City.
What was your dummy's name?
Buford.
What was his voice?
Is it classic voice? I'll do it right now.
Okay.
Well, I have to lower my voice, so there's more of a... differential. Yeah.
Well, I don't need the process. I just want to talk.
Right, I'm interested in the process.
Thank you.
I want to talk to Buford.
Well, all right.
Hi, Buford.
Hey there.
He's moving his mouth. I can see it.
Yeah, but he's covering his face with his hands.
I can't do it. Well, right, first of all,
I can't look at him when he does this.
I can't do it. I can't do
here,
it.
Here, you know what? Use this case. As a mouthpiece. If you need something.
It'll be like 1, 2, 3, 4.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello there.
Hello there.
How are you today?
Okay.
Like that. So it'd kind of be, it's like a very squeezed kind of voice. I haven't done it in a long time. But obviously. But yeah. I was.
What made you get into?
So basically, the ventriloquist act is really just greeting people all the time. Hello, how are you? I'm good. How's it going?
I actually performed at my senior prom. I did ventriloquism.
Was Buford your date to prom?
No, Stacy was. It was. Yeah, that would have been sad. That would have been even more sad.
Was she a dead girl that you made to talk?
Would it have been sadder than Stacy was when you were doing ventriloquism?
It would be great if you came inside me. I'm a cadaver. I can't get pregnant. Everybody, she wants it.
This is embarrassing.
We can have Stacy.
Yeah, you know where my senior prom was? At the Breakers in West Palm Beach, Florida. Beach, Florida.
At Breakers. Breakers.
Yes, famous hotel. Famous one of the only 5-star hotels in Florida.
That's pretty fancy.
Yeah, it was
so
very fancy.
So you're a Florida guy.
Yeah, that's where I went to high school in
that's
Florida.
That's probably where his love of coasters came from.
From Florida. Florida. But yeah, I grew up in two places, Silver Spring, Maryland, and a place, I know this is going to sound racist, but Plantation, Florida.
Well, that does. I mean,
yes, Plantation.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. I concur.
So that's where I went to high school and then went to NYU. Then after college, a few years later.
Elevator Repairman.
Yes, that's when I was at Elevator talking to Irving Berlin.
Don't turn around. Uh-oh.
The Commissar. I was just talking to Jimmy Pardo about their Commissar.
What was Jimmy Pardo saying about the Commissar?
Well, we were saying that, what's the deal with
Wayne?
Why
am I saying
you,
that correctly?
Why can't you turn around while he's in town? He doesn't like eye contact?
He doesn't want to, he doesn't, it's like pointing
at people.
It's
not even pointing, don't even look at this guy.
Yeah.
Don't even look
at
this guy.
Don't recycle other podcast bits.
All right, sorry. I'm sorry, I'm free. Okay, here's something I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
Something I've never spoken about before. Mm. And it's a new concept I'm coming up with. I want to run it by you guys. Tell me what you think.
Okay.
All right, we all know what name dropping is.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right, I was just talking to John Hamm about it.
Right, sure.
Okay.
Of course.
I've come up with a subdivision of name dropping, and I've titled it, and I wanted to see if you think this is worthy of a title or even a subcategory.
Okay.
It's called the Marty Drop. And the Marty Drop is, it's a name dropping, but it's only the first name of the person in a effort to sort of imply an intimacy, a familiarity with this person, and it makes you sound super douchey when you say it.
So instead of saying Robert De Niro, you'd say Bobby.
Right.
Would you say Bobby De Niro, or would you say Bobby? Just the first
Bobby.
Name?
Like, oh, yeah. Well, oh, yeah, when I was shooting that scene with Bobby.
Do you follow it up?
I was at Nobu. You know, Bobby invited me over.
So here's the douchiest version of that is someone saying the first name, and then before you can even ask, giving you the full name, like they're being inconvenienced in some way because you didn't know.
So
I was just over having dinner with Bobby. Robert De Niro.
Yeah, that's even a word. But I like when people don't even do it, and it's like you sound horrible. Like I was just thinking about Life of Pi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's the director of that?
Ang.
Right. But if you just said Ang.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, I really thought Ang deserved that award.
Angry.
You sound like a horrible. I feel like that's a Marty. And I come from that from Martin Scorsese because I know people like refer to him as Marty.
As Marty.
So that would be my Marty. What do you think?
I like it. I think we need a name for that.
And you think it's the Marty Drop?
I don't. Maybe the Bobby Drop. You think
Bobby Drop? I like something about
it. Might be the Bobby Drop. Might be the one. It's one of those two. I just want to run it by him. It was in my head.
Like
now it's out.
You.
Now
I
it's
think the Bobby Drop's great.
But Bobby. I don't know.
When I hear people go about, oh, that was when Marty finally won for The Departed. It was, we were all relieved.
What if the person's name is already shortened?
What do you mean?
Do you shorten it even
more?
No,
no, no, no. It doesn't have to be a shortened name. It just has to be the first name.
Just the first name.
Sometimes it is the nickname, but it usually just has to be the first name under, implying that you're super familiar with them.
Right, like when we did the podcast with Tom, that was a lot of fun.
Exactly, Tom Hanks.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. Like, why would you say that? Like, yeah. Even though you may even know him as Tom. Like, at one point, you have to realize this person is super famous.
Is it douchier to just say the first name if you actually do know someone, or is it douchier to say, oh, when we did this podcast with Tom Hanks, like, what's... I guess it's douchier if someone's
I think it's douchier.
Do you want to order breakfast? And then
douchier.
I say, well, we did
if
this
I think a first name
Hanks.
Is always douchier, but you're saying that if you say the whole name, you sound disingenuous, like you don't really know them?
Or
like if you were like even talking about Doug Benson or something. Doug? I don't know if Doug is quite, because he's sort of a culty, famous guy in a certain...
Also, his name has a good... Doug Benson!
Yeah, it certainly does.
I call him Doug, though. I mean, I always refer to him as Doug.
I have some old videotape of him performing at Igby's. Do you know what that is?
Igby's. I performed at Igby's.
You did. Do you know what that is?
Igby's was a comedy club in West L.A. that's like a strip joint now.
Yes, Plan B.
And it was...
What's the name of the strip joint?
Plan B.
That's like if your things don't work out, there's always Plan B.
Which also is the name of the RU486. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, the morning after pill is also called Plan B.
Oh, it is?
RU486.
Yeah. Oh my God! I didn't
Chris
know that.
Chris signed an email to me. Are you 486, Chris? That's true. I'm sure I have it.
I did.
You did.
I my
because we just there was a period of time where we would sign emails to each other with whatever the most inappropriate thing we could think of was. Great.
And I signed mine. Are you 486, Chris?
Yes.
Oh my God! I'm so proud of myself. I'm about to. dispense this email. Yeah, Igby's, what was the guy who owned that place?
Jan Smith. Yeah.
When I was at UCLA, I was in a stand-up comedy group and with Mike Furman and this guy Steve Callahan.
But I met Mike Furman when he was in high school, right?
You did.
Yeah.
You performed at a college in San Luis Obispo something. And that's how, and he was obsessed with comedy and he came up to you. I remember this whole story. And so, but then we met at UCLA. So you actually met Mike Furman before I did.
Yeah, we talked. He came up to me afterwards and we chatted. I gave him, I thought, some pretty good advice.
So Furman, I met him in like 90, what was your advice that you gave him?
I don't remember.
I thought some pretty good advice.
So I met Furman in like 91. And as the comedy club, perform at, like, there was a Santa Monica Improv. We performed at Igby's. I had a set at Igby's and I was dating a girl at the time. And then a couple days later, she broke up with me. And of course, I assumed it was because I had a bad set.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You weren't wrong.
I probably wasn't. It was not a good set.
That's possible. I mean, it is so humiliating when you have a bad set. I mean, it is one of the worst things.
It is public humiliation.
Do you think the opposite of what you want as a comedian, which is control of the situation.
Do you think a girl that you're dating and it's a kind of a relatively new relationship, if she sees you bomb, can she fully respect you after that?
No.
I don't, unless she knows comedy and what the process is, but if she's just a normal, like, oh, this guy's terrible, and he unravels under the slightest bit of pressure.
That's what I did.
I mean, bombing is one of the worst, to me. I don't know. I just find
it can put me out for like a month of like just utter, I'm not going on stage.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
That's why you have to perform a lot.
I know.
Because then if you just have one bad set out of, 10 in a week, then it's
not
that big
a
deal.
Thing. It's not that. Yeah. No, I do feel like until I get back up on stage and have a reasonable set, that I'm not quite right with the world.
You know what I've been struggling with a little bit lately is...
Language? Pointing.
Language and pointing.
Yeah.
Segways? Yeah.
Not sequiturs.
No, not sequiturs.
I'm guessing. You're asking me a
question.
I did ask you. Yeah, so
no,
you want me to keep
you
guessing?
Would answer.
Yeah, I'm trying to be...
Okay, I'll tell you what. Three more guesses.
Okay, hair length?
Nope.
Allergies.
No, but that's so good.
It's speed limit in the neighborhood. Neighborhood speed limit.
Crazy. They should be higher.
So well, you asked. You're asking.
Anything 25 to 35 miles per hour.
Freeway.
neighborhood speed limits. unposted neighborhood speed limits.
Tell me if you found this. Tell me if you found this.
Found what?
Okay.
I answer questions. I'm sorry. I know you do the rhetorical question and answer it yourself. Hey, am I funny? Yes. Do I go
like
out
answering
like
my own questions? Of course I do. I've actually been having a little bit of trouble because I've been on the road so much doing hour-long sets.
Okay, that's an hour.
This is an hour. This is a longer set.
Yeah.
That I've been struggling a little bit, like coming back and doing like 10-minute sets.
Oh.
Did you ever find that? But you write joke jokes.
I do routines. I do routines.
But you can turn jokes really well though.
Thank you.
So, but I find that I've had a little bit of trouble lately because some of the bits that I've been doing, which have been born out of longer sets, lack context. And so when I try to chop them out and just do it in,
you feel like they don't have the
7 minutes. It's like, yeah, because there's none of the getting to know the audience and having it come organically out of a set.
Let me just say, those are great problems to have.
Those are good problems.
Those are good problems for a comedian to have. No, I understand totally what you're talking about, but that if you flip it around, the other side is much worse.
Yes.
Where like, oh, I can kill for seven, but after 35 minutes, I'm sweating like Albert Brooks in a James L. Brooks movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Like Albert Brooks in a James L. Brooks movie.
With a soundtrack by Garth Brooks. Right, and starring and co-starring Michael Foster Brooks.
And Brooks and Dunn.
Brooks and Dunn.
I think, I don't know, right. Foster Brooks. Mel Brooks.
I'm just saying.
I know. It's how our minds work.
Brooke Burke.
Yeah.
It's a singular.
It's a good problem to have. That's all I can say. I know you're complaining about it, but there's a lot of comedians are like, yeah, oh, I'm sorry.
Certainly not complaining about it.
You can't take your hour set and filter it out to 7 minutes and feel good about yourself.
It's just, you know.
I think maybe your problem, and I haven't actually seen you do a really short set in a while. I've just seen you do the longer sets, but maybe you gotta just tweak what you're starting with. You just sort of There's no question.
I feel like that was
obvious. You need, in a 7 minute set, yeah, and that's...
No, I think you have to do it a little more than you want to be doing it.
You mean...
So I'm saying maybe 3 minutes, 2.5 to 3 minutes of you being funny with the audience.
Of pulling them in, yeah. No, I totally agree. Yeah. I totally agree. But I also, you know, building an hour on the road, I've not been writing, like, quick, fast jokes. They've all been stories and
conversations. Say building an hour on the road is like... one of the best things in life.
It's so much fun.
It's one of the best, most satisfyingly creative things.
Because you're forming a relationship with the audience, and everything's being born out of the interaction.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, it's I'm thrilled you're doing that.
When did you start doing? Because you did all the Carolines and the Evening at the Improv.
I did all the Baby Boom TV shows.
And so what?
All of them.
What were if you did one? Were you just in the machine?
Oh, that's interesting. Kind of, but you still had to audition and people had to see you. And yeah, there was comedy. Comedy Tonight was something that was on. And then Caroline's Evening at the Improv, MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour.
Oh, shit, I forgot.
Yeah, Half Hour Comedy Hour. Mario Joyner hosted that, right?
Yeah, he hosted it sometime. Yeah.
Span Up Spotlight, VH1.
Yes,
Rosie O'Donnell.
Of course, I did that numerous.
Oh, wow.
And she gave me one of the greatest swags afterwards, which was this. Like great jacket with leather sleeves, like a athletic jacket. What
like
would
a
you
varsity
call it?
Jacket?
Yeah, varsity jacket. So, but I lost it in Boston Airport, in Logan Airport.
Maybe she'll give you another one.
Logan Internet.
No. And she was just so nice. But so all of the, I did every one of those shows.
I would murder someone for a Cheers crew varsity jacket. Anyway, go ahead.
But here's the weird thing. I'm going to drop a name. Someone who's dead, Greg Giraldo.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, he was once talking. I saw him in an interview once. He was talking about thinking about doing stand-up because he was a funny guy, and I guess he was going to law school or something. And he was like, I know, I'd watch Richard Pryor. And George Carlin was like, okay, this is ridiculous. I cannot even think. Why would I be even thinking of that? But then I'd watch Evening at the Improv. I'm like, okay, I'm funnier than these guys. And I was like, he was probably watching me.
I mean, yeah. At
he was
time,
probably watching me go, yeah, all right, I'm funnier than Wayne Fetterman.
You know, there was a difference between watching Pryor and Carlin, who were basically like films.
Yeah, right.
And then the TV version, which is basically like the Hanna-Barbera version of comedy.
It's low rent.
Where you knew, you know, like you knew in like 92... It was going. It was coming down.
Why are you saying God?
I'm just thinking about all those old stand-up specials, and I just wish I could track. Like, I wish I could watch them. Like, I wish there was a Paley.
A lot of it would
Hulu?
Not.
I wish there was a Paley.
Hulu shows the Evening at the Improv.
A lot of it would not hold up. A lot of it does not hold up.
Oh, that's why I want to watch it.
Of course.
But you knew. But you knew that it was all going south. The bubble was bursting in like '92 when
you'd be
Comedy
like, that's
Central
when the
did short attention span theater.
Right.
And it was like, here's 20 comics talking about Cheerios.
And you realize,
and you show all clips from all those shows, and everyone's like, "Hey, Cheerios are weird." Hey, what's the, you know?
I think there was a little more to the bit than that.
No. It was just that
Cheerios weird.
That's how you remember
it. Was it? Did you feel like there was? I mean, it was a good. You're going to pee. It was a good time. Feels like it was a good time to do comedy because there were so many places to do comedy. But it also seemed like, oh, there's a lot of noise too. But people did go to comedy clubs.
It was a thing. It was definitely a thing. It was definitely a thing. And so. I was in the middle of it, and I was always trying to, you know, just navigate and trying not to get lost. And when I moved to California, I felt like my career went back a couple notches.
from where I was in New York.
Well, they're just more, it's not, I mean, doing comedy is just better in New York.
I know, and I really thought, so.
Just in terms of, like, the population density, the number of places that are available, the types of people that go to shows. It's like, you know, California is all, it's mostly industry people. So it's sort of, you know, like, and when I first started doing comedy.
When did you start? Well, when did you start? I know that's a, I'm asking your question.
I have
question.
The same answer, which is.
Ventriloquism in high school.
I did it a handful of times in college, and I was in
at UCLA with this group.
With this group, I was in this comedy group.
Did you see? Because I performed at UCLA. They used to have comics in the cafeteria.
Yeah. Well, there was the Tuesday night show that was in the cafeteria.
You probably were in school with it because I did.
I was in school.
I did it with Janine once.
You did it with Janine and Cross and like all those guys.
Yeah.
It was the Uncabaret group.
Uh-huh.
The alt comics all did that room. As well. So there was a Tuesday night comedy show at the Coop, it was called. The Cooperage.
That's it. Yeah.
And there was a little stage, and then you would go to the cafeteria and then all the tables. And and there was a fucking phenomenal Monday or Tuesday night comedy show there. That was Monday night was on Cabaret, I think, and then Tuesday night was this show. And so I did. I went and watched that, and I was in a comedy group. I mean, and we would write once a week together and flesh out material, but I didn't really start doing stand up until 98. That's when I
98
said, okay, I'm gonna do it. I'd been afraid of it for a long time, and I didn't know. I had a lot of the same trappings that all new people have, which is, how do I start? And like, well, you just start. So,
but you would have already had success on television.
I was already on television at that point.
Yeah, so you were coming from a different
trajectory. No, well, yes, in the sense that I I still started in open mics. I didn't start. I mean, I didn't.
Do you feel like people resented you?
Well, you know, I think
Aaron did.
Well, but
really, did he say that?
That basically just means I was the rest of the world. Yes, he hated my guts.
Right.
Because the sentiment was that I was a guy who was on MTV who was going to give this comedy thing a shot. But in reality, I had been obsessed with stand-up my whole life, and I had always wanted to do comedy.
Cursed with a job on television.
I just got a job on television before I started my stand-up career.
Interesting.
But stand-up was the thing that I always wanted to do.
I love it. I love it. Always.
Always. There was never a question that I was not going to do comedy.
Because it's funny, because now there's comedy nerds, right?
Sure.
How would you describe it? I know this is the nerd.
How would I describe the comedy nerd?
Would you say you were a comedy nerd?
There's no question. I had every comedy album. I didn't have every.
That's an exaggeration.
Well, I had as many as I could get my hands on.
Anything else you want to just talk in vague terms while I ask a specific question?
I like things.
At every comedy album, really. You had all the Moms Mabley comedy albums. That's insane.
Except really? Nichols and May. He hated
that thing. Improvisation and music.
You're listening to aggressive interviews with Wayne Fetterman. Wayne asks a question and then calls you out repeatedly.
I would fucking listen to the shit out of that.
So you had the comedy albums, and you had a stereo, or are they on cassette? Or I'm very curious about
vinyl,
this.
Cassette. And then I also, I video recorded every like Showtime, Evening at the Improv, all of them, HBO specials. Cinemax had one called Comedy Experiment, which was their
videotape that I imagined you like doing the
put a camera
stereoscoping.
No, I had the VCR and I would tape. So
that's
I had,
do you have those tapes?
They're in a box. Yeah. So I have. Not only did I tape all the comedy specials, but I also taped SNL every week.
Uh-huh.
And so I have all these old VHS tapes of SNL with like the fucking awesome commercials in the middle.
Right.
And so I knew all those.
Just so you know, when SNL syndicates their show, they sweeten it.
Oh.
So watch your original ones and you'll see.
I did not know
that. Yes.
It's probably a good idea because not every sketch is a home run.
First of all, they cut out half the show anyway.
Here's the other thing, too. They even now, like a couple years ago, I wanted to get, I heard about this sketch that Julia Louis-Dreyfus did towards the end of an episode that she had hosted. This is like in 2007,
mm-hmm.
and it bombed, and my roommate was like, oh my god, the sketch was awkward but funny because it was so bad. And then I bought it on iTunes like 2 days later, the sketch was removed.
Interesting.
Really?
So yeah, they're very
gone.
It's just an interesting, like, if you have those original broadcasts, those are gonna be different, I think, even than those DVDs they're selling.
I had all those were all categorized.
That's cool.
And I loved I was a voracious like I didn't I mean the types of comedy that I tended to that was were always my favorites were your like your more surreal like Steve Martin was my ultimate.
He was.
But Emo Phillips, Stephen
Wright.
Did
you ever see? You know, Nia never saw. You know,
did I see him live once.
You
I,
did.
I saw him live in Vegas.
Wow.
My dad was at a bowling proprietors convention in the '70s or yeah, and we went and they took me to see Steve Martin.
That must have been a mind blowing.
I was very young. All I remember from it was a guitar coming down and him doing King Tut.
Right.
I remember seeing Carson in Vegas and Joan Rivers open for him. And
oh like my God, I saw Carson once, but not in Vegas. You have the greatest dad.
My parents recognized.
Do you remember Carson's act at all?
I remember him doing the bit about being a substitute teacher and being hungover.
Yeah, that was his closer.
And so,
that was his encore, actually. Yeah.
And I remember meeting Joan Rivers afterwards, and she was really sweet.
Okay,
to
now.
My mom. And so my parents recognized at a very young age that I was obsessed
with
comedy.
So you had nurturing parents.
Very nurturing parents.
This is the opposite of most comedians.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right?
Yes.
But yeah. I tended to, but like I loved everyone. Like, I watched Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip over and over. I watched like all the Dangerfield specials.
No, of course.
And I loved, as much as I loved Emo Phillips, I also loved guys like Dennis Wolfberg and
those are comic strip acts.
Kevin Meaney and every different kind of comic. I loved all of it. So there wasn't even any one kind of comic that I loved, but I watched everything.
So you were now, is it weird when like there's comedy nerds now? Like, do you feel
is
it weird? I mean, but is it interesting to you that you're like a comedian and kids follow you and have stuff of yours and catalog stuff?
Well, I don't know. I just don't. I think in my head, I still don't think that makes me the same as those guys. I just.
You don't?
No. Because, with the exception of like Louis.
Yeah.
Because of the way that media has changed.
Well, I'm loving this conversation, by the way.
There are not really any more super comics. And when I was growing up, because there was still only a handful of outlets.
Because do you feel like it's because I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you feel like because it's become
splintered.
Segregated?
It's so very splintered.
So you get the comic for this guy.
We're very niche culture now.
Yeah.
And so
do you agree?
Yeah, it's like everyone's doing local material. But
and so
for your interests. You know what I mean?
It's like, the 1,000 fans model as opposed to the million fan model. It's a 1,000 fan model as opposed to a million man fan model. And so, at the time in television, Seinfeld.
There are more super comics than you think.
I don't think so. There are less people.
I love this guy.
There are less people that can fill an arena now than
yeah, but
could
you're
have.
Louis is the only one, but you got Gaffigan who can fucking fill.
No,
an
no,
arena
no, no. You're right. You're. Yeah. I'm not.
Would
I'm
you
not,
say he's a super comic?
Gaffigan is. I would say Gaffigan is.
In the realm of
what about?
I find that people I know who aren't into comedy.
Yeah. No.
Are aware.
Let me put it this
Gaffigan
way. Let me put it this way. Gaffigan can go into a town like Chicago and sell out 5 shows in a big theater. That to me is achieving a level of super. Chris Rock, Chappelle had it, but he kind of didn't want it.
What about Cat?
Cat Williams?
Yeah.
I mean, without a doubt.
What about Kathy Griffin?
No. I don't think
she sells out.
She can move.
She can.
Really?
She moves a lot of tickets.
Really?
Oh my God. Are you kidding?
Yeah. But,
all right.
Chelsea,
then.
Chelsea, too. Handler, yeah. She goes anywhere. She can sell.
I know, but now and then, I mean, look, I'm a comedy nerd from before that was even a term. But I mean, that goes back to the cross pollination of media into the stand up. Yeah. Like people know Gaffigan, but Gaffigan wouldn't be as big if he didn't do Letterman.
Right.
Like that helps.
Maybe, but I think what tipped it for Gaffigan was Beyond the Pale. Beyond the Pale.
That hour.
That hour,
yeah, that was pretty good.
Tipped it for him, and the genius of Gaffigan is that
I love him.
He can do alternative rooms, he can do mainstream rooms, fucking squeaky clean.
Yeah,
and he's fantastic. But when I think of like the comic relief comics when I was growing up, and it was like Robin Williams and Whoopi and Billy Crystal and Seinfeld and.
But even that, I don't know if Shanling was. Selling out theaters, and I couldn't be
sure.
A big,
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
During Larry Sanders.
I mean, I guess maybe
during
then.
Gary Shandling's show, the Showtime show.
I don't know if he was selling out theaters. I know he was maybe. I mean, I know he's doing Vegas and stuff in Chicago. I don't know. I'll
ask him.
I'll ask him then. Let's call him up.
Kennison.
So, God, that guy. When he used to come by the comic strip, they wouldn't let him on a catch. They wouldn't let him on a Catch a Rising
Star. Catch a Rising Star?
Yeah. So he came over to the comic strip, and for some reason, this guy Lucian, he was the manager of the comic strip, loved him and would put him on, and it was mind-blowing. For me, as a comedian, mind-blowing what he did.
Why?
Than Hicks, in my opinion.
Why do you think that?
Well, I mean, because Hicks couldn't have been more primal. I had never seen a comedian that primal.
But Kinison,
and I'm talking, he had a very short peak period, what I call, when he was hilariously funny, and then he went off to this rock and roll thing, and it just got a little weird.
But Hicks was basically doing what I would consider alternative comedy. But Kinison wasn't. Kinison was doing a very mainstream comedy, but Hicks was basically at war with the audience a lot because he was performing in the middle of the country and basically saying, you're all fucking stupid.
Right, right. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying Kinison was a much stronger act than Bill Hicks was.
I want to aggressively agree with you.
But you're saying that Kinison, you felt, was more of a sellout comedian?
No. I think Kinison was more mainstream. That's not him being a crowd pleaser. He was more mainstream. He had much more success than Hicks.
Oh, I don't know if I really, because my definition always of a great comedian is someone who brings you into their world.
I'm not saying great.
Do you agree with that?
I'm saying he had more success. Kinison was a much more famous comic than Hicks.
Oh, definite. No doubt about it. But one of the reasons was he was a groundbreaking comedian in a way, as someone who was like you, been watching comedy his whole life. I'd never seen anyone on that level talk about what he had done and the style and the screaming and
I mean just that set that he had on the 9th annual Young Comedian special, where it was Sam and Saget and Rita Rudner and Yakov Smirnoff and Louis Anderson, and then a couple other comics, Harry Basil, another comic named Richie Gold that I never saw again, and Bob Nelson.
Yeah, I know all those guys.
Number 72, 27. Number 27, 7. So those guys, and then Kinison just fucking leveled. And I remember my dad saw the special first, and he would tape all those for me. And so he was
I love your parents.
You got to see this one.
I love
one,
your parents.
You got to see this one guy. He's this whole bit about move to where the food is. You remember that, this Kinison?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Could you imagine a more politically incorrect bit?
Because you live in a fucking desert! Nothing's gonna grow here!
Could you imagine that?
This is sand.
It's sand. It doesn't say anything.
Nothing's gonna grow.
He had that little laugh, that little giggle of his. Yeah. He was something. They're doing a movie of him.
Who's playing him?
I don't know. I mean, it was just, I know it's happening. I know it's in the pipeline. But it's obviously not you.
That's fine.
I think we just found that out.
It's not anyone in this room. It's not you either.
It's not me. It's not Wayne Federer.
Be what's his name from Fanboys, that movie? The heavyset guy that's in that.
Oh,
this is fun. This is fun.
Forget it. Let's move on.
How was the
talking?
Was it fun? It must have been fun to be doing comedy in the '80s.
Yeah. I mean, especially at that club, at the comic strip in New York.
Have crowds changed?
Yeah. Now when I go back and do New York, I can't believe how international the crowds are, to an annoying thing where every MC is who's from Sweden? Who's from Germany?
No,
but
what about
wow, it was not really? That. Yeah.
What about
it's
the types
all
of
international,
though?
The what?
The types of material. Because in the 80s, there was a lot of unmined territory. A lot of right. A lot of girls go to the bathroom in groups. A lot of airline. A lot of that was all new.
I know it was pretty. It was pretty exciting. I think it was more weird, just how much the culture was thirsty for young comedians. And now looking back on it, I feel bad for those guys, those Vegas guys. They didn't want any of those guys on MTV or on Evening at the Improv or any of those, Norm Cross or any of those working their whole lives comedians. So, I did the CBS morning show, their version of the Today Show. They had young comedians on. I don't know if you remember American Bandstand used to have young comedians on.
Everyone had young comedians.
I don't know what was going on. I think it was just clean, cheap programming. and led by Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, America.
Led by that. I'm not saying him, but that aesthetic of like, yeah, this is they're going to make fun of everything. Whereas someone almost called it nitpicking the world.
Do you think it's better to do comedy now, or was it better to do it then?
What it is.
Oh, I think comedy's better now.
Yeah.
Not even a question. I'm not saying I'm better. I'm just saying comedy, yeah, I just feel like where it goes and the I just, Patton, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
What do you think about Louis' I'm going to do a special every year thing?
I think it's bold.
Good for him if he can do it.
But don't you think that then you run the risk of burning people out on you quickly? If you do a special every year, is it really special?
Look at Carlin. Every year we'd all be like, you see Carlin's new special?
Right. I know I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I didn't like Carlin's last third of his career or the last quarter of his career.
Really?
Yeah, there's one bit. Are we allowed to swear on this?
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, one of his bits was fuck kids.
So you think he became more of a caricature later in the years?
I just didn't think it was that. I didn't think there was that many great bits in those hours. And I thought he was like came off as a horrible curmudgeon. It was just like yelling it. It was just like he was yelling it, like hated everything, and that was his angle. And he still did the voices once in a while. And there can't be a bigger Carlin fan than me. And also, I wish I was one-tenth the comedian that George Carlin was. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying at the end of his career, like, I just thought that was, I don't know. I just thought it was mean. I just thought it was mean and not good. I'm like, oh, you like God? Fuck God. You like this? Fuck you. You're an idiot. You like America? Fuck you. You like this? You like entertainment? You're a jerk. You like it?
Fuck you, fuck you, and then you're a jerk.
And that hurt the most.
Well, I don't,
feel like those specials at the end?
I don't, I mean, you know, I'll say that they didn't affect me as much as the original, like, Carlin at Carnegie kind of, you know, or the one where he was
and I'm not saying he had to keep doing bits about the difference between baseball and football or something like that. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
But you were saying that it became more about the caricature of attacking and less about the kind of word crafting that he was really.
He still did that. I mean, one of his last bits that was kind of the old was that I've been downloaded, I've been uploaded, I've been synthesized. You know, he'd use all the words.
Yeah.
Like that was his. There's a series called Comedians Talking or something. It's on Comedy Records where he's just interviewed by Larry Wilde. Do you know about this?
Oh, no.
I would highly recommend it. It's like a master's course in stand-up comedy.
I'm a fucking idiot. Why haven't I heard this?
I think it's from, do you remember that book, The Great Comedians Talk About Comedy, Larry Wilde?
Yeah.
But then I think he did a follow-up and interviewed people like Seinfeld and Carlin, towards the end of his career, and even though I didn't like what he was doing, became very effusive about how he got where he was, what his process was, who these people that helped him and inspired him. I mean, he couldn't be more gracious, and his mind is he's brilliant. There's no, he's a brilliant guy, right? Or maybe no.
Yeah,
no, he's a brilliant guy, yeah.
But yeah, so, God, I wish, I want to say Laugh Records or something like that. You can get, I mean, I got it on Amazon and, like, downloaded it.
Did you upload it and download it?
I've been spindled. I've been
spindled and kindled.
But he would
dwindled.
Talk about, like, he would do lists was part of his bit. Like, I would be able to list things. And he had just a facility to remember all of that. But I highly recommend it. It's really interesting. It talks about how swearing helped his career and hurt Lenny Bruce's career because they kind of overlap a little bit.
Just a little bit. I mean, definitely, Carlin was much more part of the cultural revolution of the 70s.
No doubt, no doubt.
Rather than, you know, the 60s were still holding on to the 50s, like the post-war. Like, that generation just had to get 10 years older that, you know, I feel like he missed that mainstream youth by, like, 10 years. But
Lenny
I guess
Bruce?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But he still had a big college.
He had a big following.
A big college following.
But it wasn't like a massive, you know, like.
Right.
Carlin may have been attacked in the press for like, oh, how dare he say these things. But it didn't. He wasn't blacklisted, you know, or ostracized from mainstream entertainment.
He became famous.
Yes. So, and I think
that's
just
what he was talking. Oh, you're saying it was just a matter of the time.
Just
he
the
did
timing.
It. Yeah, of course.
Just the cultural timing, which, of course, you know, was a big deal because Lenny Bruce still did what he wanted to do anyway.
Right. But anyway, I just thought it was in Carlin's career. It's just a fascinating.
But Lenny Bruce, obviously, when Joan Rivers was on the podcast, yeah. She was saying he was the guy that they all worshipped. And she would go and see him, and then if he ever complimented anyone, they were like,
he was the guy. Like, he was the king of that village comedians.
Yes.
Right?
And I think Louis has that now,
but
also mainstream. And so my point was not, are his specials going to be any good? But if you do a special every year, 5 or 6 specials in, is it still... special. Or people like, and the answer is, I don't know. I mean, if anyone could sustain it, I think Louis could.
If you're prolific enough and you have enough new things to say, sure, keep putting out an hour. Doug does it. Every Doug Benson album, I think, is great. Doug's an excellent joke writer, and I'm fine with Doug putting out an hour every year. It's enjoyable.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. I mean, I'm looking forward to April, whatever, when Louis' HBO special comes on. I'm looking forward to it. So it does kind of feel special to me. But you're obviously mad at him. I don't know what happened.
No, I'm not. This isn't.
I remember sitting in Toronto next to you, barreled over laughing at Louis. This is interesting.
You know, guys,
it's interesting what's happening.
Okay, I know your comedy taking this in the wrong direction, but it's pissing me off. Because that's not what I'm saying. I'm speaking on a broader,
yes, of course,
philosophical, just the idea of.
I agree with you. I mean, I just the amount of time it takes to me to get killer bits. I don't know if you can do in a year or in one tour. And by the end of the tour, you're like, this is my hour, and this is what I was thinking of doing that year.
Because I'm not even making a judgment call on it. I'm asking.
Is it that special?
Does it burn out after when you get to 7 or 8, and the answer is I don't know.
He's close to 7 or 8 now, right?
That's why Matthew Perry's character on Studio 60 was so amazing. An hour and a half of comedy. He'd write it every week.
Of solid gold, A-list.
But yeah, Louis is the king. Louis is the king.
It is a place that every comedian aspires to be, where your machine is so fluid.
I don't know how we
you can just throw any topic into it and it's going to come out like a hay bale of comedy.
that's a great visual. Let me ask you a question, because you do a number of things.
Yeah.
And Louis does that television show.
Not now.
But he did. He did a couple seasons of it.
Yeah, he did 3 seasons, and he's taking a season off. He's taking a year off.
He's taking a year off of doing the show.
The show's not going to come back till 2014.
Okay. All right.
Is what I read.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But even then, he was still doing a new hour during those seasons, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you feel like you could write a new hour and be his... I just don't know how he does it physically and takes care of kids.
I will say this. There's a much greater parallel between the bits that he's doing on the show are essentially, he's basically writing stand-up. They're expressions of stand-up.
Right.
And I feel like a lot of the stuff that I work, it's not like I can spin an hour out of Talking Dead. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he's essentially writing.
Wait, Talking Dead?
Yeah, it's a show I host. So... he's basically, go ahead, sorry, do whatever you're going to do your bit.
I feel it. I don't know about
this. Chris hosts a show after The Walking Dead where they talk about it, and it's called The Talking Dead.
Yeah.
Every week?
Well, every week The Walking Dead's on, yeah.
Talking Dead?
Yes, it's a show.
And that's part of, and is there a cast?
No, it's just a talk show.
Do you bring people from the show?
Yeah.
From the show Walking Dead?
Yes.
And talk about their characters?
And the episode that we just watched and so on and so forth.
Interesting. I've never seen the show Walking Dead.
It's fine.
You like the show?
I love it. That's why I went after the job.
Did you create the job or did you?
Did not. I just found out they were doing it, so I ran after it.
How? Is this embarrassing that you would?
No. It's not embarrassing at all. One of the heads of AMC was an old boss of mine at MTV.
I see the way it works. The way it works now.
We had a conversation. And I said, I really wanted, he said.
Can I quote that? You had a conversation.
Yeah, he emailed. I was pursuing the job.
What does that mean? Do you have your agent call him?
Yes, yes. You have your representatives contacted AMC and said I wanted to meet with them about it. But at the same time, he, because I had worked for him at MTV, sent me an email and said, hey, I want to talk to you about something. And then he said, you know, we're doing this show. Or you have any interest in it? I was like, that's so crazy. I was just pursuing this from another angle. And
that, can that be any better?
No.
How happy were you when you got the thing?
Exceedingly happy.
Because you were like, this is only a one, and already they would like me, were thinking about me before even.
Yes. So wrapping it back around, Louis's show is basically a visual extension of his stand-up.
Mm-hmm. And that is,
it's basically like Louis is like a high-budget vlog, I think. It's singular point of view.
Love it.
Yeah. Singular point of view. Mm-hmm. It's basically just him doing what he does and expressing comedy, you know,
through
this very kind of intimate experience. So I look at his show as like a beautifully successful high budget vlog.
You might be right. Because he does break a lot of sitcom rules, right? Yeah. About, or I don't even know if sitcom is even the word.
Rules anymore,
that's not even a, not even a sitcom is a bad example.
You know, I think he benefits from that show of as he's creating material for the show, he's getting material for his act at the same time, I think.
I see. I agree with that. I never even thought about it in that way, but you're saying it's complimentary.
Very complimentary.
Yeah. Okay.
So I find that write as much in a day.
Plots, do you find that the plots of Louis' show show up in his specials?
Whether or not they show up in the specials, he's still like, I'm guessing there are some things that are like, oh, that's better for stand up, or I'll try that out. Or as he's, you know, as he goes and does stand up, that for the little vignettes of stand up, the stuff that he's not using on the show, he can take into his act, you know? So he writes at such a high volume that there's plenty of room that I'm sure he can go, I'll use this for the show. I can use this on the road.
Right. That's a good.
Yeah. So.
I see. So they sort of feeds off of each other as opposed to a completely separate, oh, during the week, I'm an elevator sales.
Yeah, I can't use, like, all the stuff that I, all the other work that I do, I can't really use it.
Right.
For stand-up. Like, stand-up is a separate thing that I have to write separately for.
You use the podcast to generate stand-up sometimes?
You'd think.
You're doing something.
Sometimes?
I mean, you can have an extension.
What about this one? Not this one particularly, but this podcast.
I should try to.
Do you ever listen to these?
No.
Yeah.
No.
That's
what?
What Kyle?
I have Kyle here jot down. This
notebook is just. What are you doing? Chris says, and then I do
listen back to them and make them my notes. Yeah. I hired Kyle.
How? Do you get paid by the hour? How does it work?
By the podcast, I think.
Yeah.
I'm always curious about how things.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Well, it's like.
So you're writing things down right now?
Yeah.
I thought you were studying for a test.
He is.
Later with you.
So basically what Kyle's doing is if he hears anything, because I
could
don't
be
I'm not paying attention.
Of course.
And so if he hears something that and then he'll jot it down and go, you should develop this. He's not writing bits for
me.
He's saying,
I got it. You don't have to keep explaining this.
Well, I'm explaining it for the podcast audience.
Oh, I got it.
So he's saying, you know, here's something that you said that you might want to develop. And then so I'll take those things and then take them on stage and see if I can develop them into anything.
Red ink is stuff that I say.
I can't take bits from.
Is there anything I could use for my stand up?
Oh, I don't listen.
Oh my
we
god!
Should all,
not even me.
We should all slip. Great stuff that I've disregarded entirely. We should all just slip Kyle $20 and give him a pen.
Yeah, the rule for me is that I just can't use anything that anyone else says. Like if we're riffing and you come up with something, I wouldn't use that part.
Right, right.
I would just use my riffs.
So you can ask and you can have my tag, whatever you want.
Oh, right. But if I
could not be more intrigued. Just so you know.
In a positive way or negative?
Super positive way.
Oh, okay.
Super Wayne positive is way. The embodiment of the comedy nerd.
Do you want me to swing by? I can give you rates.
No. I love it. I've been a comedy.
I'm fascinated by this whole
thing. Well, I got the idea was because I know like when, and I'm going to mention a name.
Yeah.
And I want it to be known that I am not putting myself on the level of this comedian.
Yeah, of course.
I just thought it was a good idea. When Chris Rock goes like into a club,
but if you would say Chris, that would have been
that would
Bobby
have been
Zushi.
That would have been Bobby Drop.
Yeah, yeah.
When Chris Rock goes into a club
and starts riffing,
he has a guy who takes notes in the back, and says, this worked.
That's Eddie Murphy taking the notes, right?
It's Eddie Murphy taking the notes.
It's Charlie Murphy.
It's Charlie.
That would have been better.
Yeah, so... And so, because, I'm not always aware of what is in
conversation.
Of course,
because you want to be free.
You want to be in the moment. You want to kind of fuck around.
And even right now, when we're talking right now.
Yeah.
This is in the moment.
This is totally.
Right now.
Right now.
Yeah,
now.
That.
Now.
Okay.
This just but happened.
That. Yes.
Now it's in the past.
All
this
thing.
Is present.
What's,
it's about to happen now.
Okay, so that's what we're
present.
Talking about. Yeah.
Now we're in the present.
Okay.
This whole
current.
Time I've been reflecting on that.
Moment's gone now.
Well, I am. I'm really intrigued. That's perfect. That makes total sense.
Well, because I feel like we riff a lot on the podcast, and I feel like
if any of us bothered, if any of the three of us bothered to go back,
out of
do you not like listening? Excuse me. I don't mean to interrupt, but you don't like listening to your voice, or you don't
it's
have time.
Just, it's just it's a time
tedious.
Issue.
Tedious.
It's three. We have 350 hours.
No, no. We have 350 episodes almost.
Yeah, an
which,
hour and a half.
Which is like probably 450 hours of podcast.
There's no way you can hear that.
You're not going to listen to all that. But let's just say we had the time.
Even then.
And the desire to do it. There is at least an hour of material that has come out of the podcast that is just sitting there unmined.
Of course. Of course. Do you listen to your act when you tape it on the road?
Never. And
do
I and I record every
you
set.
Do. Of course. I
you
try.
Record every set, but you don't listen.
Almost never.
I record 70% of my sets.
70%.
Which is dumb not to do because it's...
Stop yelling at me. I'm asking you a question.
Dwayne!
Why is he raising his voice?
Dwayne!
He's very angry right now.
I don't know
really
what happened.
It's embarrassing to me.
It's embarrassing. Kyle is upset.
What is wrong?
Wait a minute.
What is wrong?
I'm throwing points at both of you.
You're being very rude.
Yeah, no,
all right,
it's
so you record every set.
Yes.
All hour of it. On, I assume, your iPhone?
Just the iPhone.
Yeah. And you have a special app?
No, just the voice recorder app.
Okay. Now... Do you have a microphone or just the regular?
Just the phone, and it sounds great.
Okay.
It's good. You couldn't put it out. It's good enough to.
So what do you do with it if you don't listen to it?
It just gets archived.
Oh, no, man. See, now, do you feel like you're a hoarder or you're a digital hoarder?
I am digitally hoarding sets because I know that there are things that I don't remember that I did that worked that are in there.
So what? You'll never listen to it.
You got to do something with them instead of just hoarding them.
I know.
The point of having them is to listen to them. And to extrapolate from there.
I understand. I run a company. I don't have time always.
But,
in fairness
to you, Chris, you do run a company.
I work 7 days a week like
you do
nonstop.
Yeah. And if you didn't, you'd die because you cannot not work.
And so
this is also part of your work should be your stand-up.
There's no question that you're right.
And you're on a plane. Maybe you don't get the Wi-Fis. You turn on the airplane mode on the phone, you take a listen to a voice memo, you get a pen out, have yourself a good time.
Sometimes my brain is tired.
You get off the plane, you get 5 hours.
Sometimes my brain is tired and I don't feel like listening to every beat of a set.
It's very strange, by the way, that there's just a group of drunk women.
That's interesting. But the interesting part to me, of course, is why you keep them and just like, all right, I'm not going to listen and I'll delete it.
You're both correct, by the way. Yes,
I should.
What
do you think of psychologically? Do you ever think about it psychologically?
I think part of it just has to do with, like, if I did have a free hour
kids?
To listen. No.
Is that part of it?
No. If I did have a free hour.
He does have two kids. They're named Jonah and Matt.
My brain is tired. And so in those moments that I have an hour, it's like, I'm going to sleep on this plane because I'm exhausted.
I can't listen to I opened up this whole segment by saying I can't listen to myself do stand-up. But you tape every set.
Mm-hmm,
and then
tape.
You pointed at me with a little bit of anger and said that I should also.
It was
no, I didn't.
It was more than a little.
I didn't say I didn't say you
little,
should
right?
also.
You were here.
I never said you should also.
Oh, you didn't say that?
No.
Well, if you would listen back, you would know.
I don't care how you record your
sets. Didn't? Okay.
No, I didn't say that.
I said
I should listen back.
Oh, okay. I got it. But you don't.
No.
I have sets from like 2007 on my
What's
phone.
Your earliest recorded set?
Probably from
UCLA. Do you have anything from UCLA?
No.
That would be good. That would be fun to see, right?
No.
Is there any video footage of your group?
There's video footage of Furman and I performing at UCLA together from 1995.
Right.
A lot of it is on mini disc. from like the late 90s, early 2000s.
That's a Sony product.
The
right?
Sony product, the mini discs.
They shoved in Cadillacs.
Which has had amazing recording quality. Stunning.
Yeah. And you can't, you can record over it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So a lot of those old sets are on mini disc. Or, yeah, I don't know if I had a tape recorder.
You're going to get to the point where you're going to have to hire an archivist like Groucho.
I'm going to hire Groucho?
Yeah, some kid.
Yeah.
Some kid
that wants to come in. And
yep, sure, there's
somebody.
I would
love to go through your stuff.
Okay. Kyle.
Kyle. Would you do that, Kyle?
I've got an hour. I'm still putting together.
Yeah. It's about me.
Oh, you're not supposed to have any ambition.
No, guys, I got here so I could... forward, right?
No, I need you to be an emotionless drone.
I want to be like, you know, just behind Matt Jonas.
Whoa.
We see what's happening.
Yeah, like I know. This. Poor Kyle
Every
can't.
Day it gets worse.
Poor Kyle can't listen to my fucking stupid voice all the time.
Now, let me ask you another question. How do you wrap this thing up? Like, is there a signal?
What's just the podcast?
Right now, yeah. This is my first time doing it.
Enjoy your burrito. Stepping away. I wish I could put your facial expressions on the podcast. Should I not? Am I don't want to stop on the bit. Should I not say anything?
I thought that's it, and then you ended. I would think that would be it.
Okay, then... yeah, that's it then.
All right.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Whatever your legal document needs, LLCs, wills, trusts, trademarks, and more, they've got it. Over 12 years and 2 million Americans have used LegalZoom. Start your business or protect your family today at LegalZoom.com using the offer code Nerdist.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.